ho, 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 and a merry mass consumerist type December to all you people who celebrate. The Running Won't Save You podcast is proudly sponsored by Innovate. And this December, that being December 2020, or this December, those wonderful creatures at Innovate are giving us a pair of trail talons to gift to you, the listener, in exchange for absolutely nothing except your email address. I've been an Innovate athlete for over 3 years, and I love all of their kit. It's amazing. I'm going to be using it on the Winter Downs 200. I've used it on very many of my big ultras. All of it is hard wearing. It is good for the environment, it's made well, and it lasts. But the trail talons are possibly one of the best things they've ever made. They're like a hybrid baby of the trail fly and the mud talon. However, on the website, they actually say they're an evolution of the hugely popular Rocklite range, which I also really liked. So the trail talon is a shoe that you would use to move quickly over softer ground. It's got a graphene-infused rubber outsole, giving it uncompromising grip on soft surfaces such as mud, but also slippery woodland trails and hard rocky ground and skiddy grass. Inspired by the hoof pattern of the mountain goat, the trail talon has 6mm cleats that firmly grip onto the toughest of surfaces. The multi-directional cleats allow the shoe to release the ground just as quickly, propelling you onto your next stride. I love these shoes. They are comfy and they're cushioned and they're amazing. And like I say, you can win a pair. All you need to do is go to the Instagram Running Won't Save You pod page and enter the competition on the link. You can also get 15% off with the code. I'm not going to tell you what the code is. The code is also on the Instagram page. So go to Instagram, Running Won't Save You Pod, get the code, go and buy yourself some nice Chrissy presents. 15% off, that's quite a lot. Anyway, enjoy the pod. There is some swearing, there is some language, there is some immaturity, but there is also some big lessons about consistency. So let's fucking go, shall we? Hello and welcome to episode 3 of season 1 of the Running Won't Save You podcast with me, Ali Bailey, that's my name, and my consistently annoying, consistently bad joke telling, consistently bad at finding books in woods personing,
ouch,
drinker of consistent tea, Damien Hall.
Oh, you're pleased with that one, aren't you? You've been planning that one.
I wrote it down.
She's literally written it down.
Oh, on an old post-it that's got a rip at the top.
What that an insight we're getting into Ali Bailey's mind.
That post-it is a metaphor for my mind.
What, sort of ripped at the top, weird colour, capitals, scrap, marker scrap pen.
Put it, wow, in the bin.
No, so, swear, yeah, words on it, though.
Put it in the bin.
Hi. Thanks. Thanks for that lovely welcome.
Welcome.
How
to
are you?
I'm just great. How are you?
I'm pretty tired, Ali. I don't know about you, but last week I did some pretty tiring things.
Have you had a week of it?
Still recovering.
Have you had a week of it?
Oof. Yeah, hanging around in woods in the dark, not eating, you know, that nutritional food, not getting much sleep. It was pretty knackering. How was your time?
You did eat some food, didn't you?
Yeah, I did eat some
food. Was all the food you ate vegan?
Oh, gosh, we're getting there already.
Yeah, here we are. How was my week? I was quite tired too, actually.
What did you do?
I spent quite a lot of time in the woods as well. Do you know what we did do together before? We went and did the spine weekend workshop. That was good, wasn't it?
That was great. I really enjoyed that. We put on a weekend in the Pennines, near the Pennine Way, and we had it was 18 people in the end come and join us for a couple of exciting runs on the Pennine Way. One was particularly exciting with a named storm.
Oh, it was so exciting, wasn't it?
We excited for you. You weren't up there.
I know. okay, I just went to the Garrigill bit, the fun bit, where everybody came down the hill and they looked like it was like something out of The Road. They all looked like they'd been in The Road.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully. Well, you know, we've had good feedback. It was it was great. It was really exciting. We visited Greg's Hut, which was very welcome sanctuary. It was a great kit test for people, and then we had people like Matt Neal, who's finished the spine 6 times, and Dr. Nikki Ligo, who's the spine checkpoint lead, and some young rapscallion who allegedly won the race without cheating. And a couple of very experienced guides, and someone waffling on about mindset and being swearing at everyone and making them upset and uncomfortable. And I think, and
Actual
pickle.
feedback received about me.
I think, I hope it was a great weekend. We hope to do more. And yeah, it was really satisfying. Very boggy. Blenkinsop. So you got to see Blenkinsop again. Did
I've got
your
to see
view
it. I got to see
change?
it twice because I ran out to meet you lot, and then I, Holly, if you're listening, you might want to just not listen to this bit. But I ended up running all the way to Rasta Ralph's and then all the way back. So that's double Blenkinsop, double bubble.
Not many
Yeah,
people have done a double Blenkinsop.
I like it.
Wow.
I love it. I just like it. I like the bogginess. But the thing is, whenever I do it, it's almost like a bit of a treat. It's not in the middle of a race, so it's Pickle loves it as well. She's just desperate to get off the lead on there because it's so boggy. But it's night. It's not. It's boggy. It's water and grass, isn't it? That's what it is. That's what a bog is, and it's not mud. And I think mud can get fucked. Like mud's different.
Right, yes, because then you had a muddier run. But I would just say, well, on Blenkinsop, yeah, and it's kind of peak Blenkinsop that I've experienced. It's when you just sort of look around you and everything around you is moving when you put your foot down, like the whole, there's not a
Oh,
stable
it's
bit
like a
of ground.
waterbed. And like you get on it and
Yes,
it's like,
that's
and
the
the whole
waterbed
thing's going.
feel.
Yeah, I love that. I love the
Yes,
waterbed feel.
that's peak Blenkinsop, and it was close to that, I would say. But yes, so you swapped sort of proper wet, boggy running for some muddier, slippery
Well, Matt Neil
running.
was referred. So for those people that don't know, I did a race at the last week called the Winter Downs 200, which is a 200-mile race that starts and finishes at Juniper Hall on the North Downs Way and goes down along the North Downs Way for about 20 miles, then goes down the horrible Vanguard Way, which is a 45-mile trail of sorts, and then it goes for, and then it turns at the bottom and goes for 80 miles along the South Downs Way, and then it goes back up again at the other end up the St Swithin's Way, which is the worst way in the UK, and then it joins the North Downs Way again and goes all the way back to Juniper Hall. So it's a big loop. It's kind of ridiculous when you think about it because you're just running back to where you started. But Matt Neil referred to this as, what did he refer to it as? The
Softy Southern 200.
Softy Southern 200, which is nice. And I think a lot of people who have done Northern Ultras might see it that way. And it is a bit softy because it is not as spiky. There's not as many spikes. There's not as many hills. There are hills, but they're runnable. But there's a fuck ton of mud. Like so much mud. Like more mud than I've ever seen. And it was that mud where people have been running, walking, riding their bikes and their horses on it for the last 3 months. It's just watery mud. It's different to bog. It's mud. Have I said mud enough? It was fucking everywhere and it was all the
Probably not.
time.
No, was it muddy?
Was exhausting. So as much as it is a bit of a, it's very different to any of those big northern, I mean, like the Northern Traverse or like the Spine's not even a 200 miler. It doesn't even count because it's 270 or whatever. But, it's got its challenges. The other thing is it's very runnable, so there's lots of like, oh fuck, I better run this instead of like, oh, I'm gonna hike it. So it was quite challenging. However, I had a great crew and my great crew, Lorna, she had a work experience with her who wasn't very good, but you gotta train them up somehow. I had a nice time, but I'm absolutely fucked, I think is the word. I'm physically fine. I'm just really, really tired and I felt quite depressed for the last few days. And it's a having to shake that one off, but I'll feel better in time. I'm just tired. Tired.
Could we hear more about the race? How was sort of early stages? Because I think you did roughly the first 50 miles with two pals.
So we are going to talk about this podcast is obviously focused around consistency, and this is relevant to the podcast. God, I'm getting so tied up in the consistency thing. But yeah, because with this race, the my aim for this race was to be consistent. What I wanted to be super consistent, and I wanted to be, and that's in everything, in eating, in like looking after myself, pacing myself, and also in what was the other thing I was going to say? God, I'm so fucked. Sorry, everybody. In the way that I was problem solving, so I didn't want to go into, I didn't want to get to the end of it or get to the last 40 miles and end up walking and feeling fucked, which is what's happened before in a lot of races. So that was the point of it. So when I went in, it's the first 200 I've done coached. So Holly was coaching me, and it's first 200 that I've done that I've sort of done knowing it's more runnable with the Wild Horse, which is the last one I did. That was very hilly, so I was like, there's gonna be a lot of hiking on this, but this one I was like, there's gonna be a lot of running. So I'm going to have to pace myself on it. And I really want to be running at the end. So I did a plan. You saw my plan, didn't you? And I thought the plan was quite
Mm-hmm.
punchy for a 62 hour, what was it? 68 hour finish. And I thought I'll try and stick to that as best I can. And it worked. So for the first 50 miles, I stuck with Sean Dyer and Jamie Grant, two people that I know. I really know Sean really well. He's paced me on a few things. And that was good because I was able to, I think I was able to hold them back a bit because they're blokes and they've both done hundreds in like under 20 hours. And I had some friends. Friend. And then I lost them at like 50 miles. So as it got to the first night, we all sort of lost each other because we all went off to our various crews and stuff. And then after that, I didn't have any friends and it was horrible. I moaned quite a lot about that.
We'll get on to your moaning in a minute. But that's a really interesting dynamic, isn't it? In a race running with other people, because you can easily they can easily be helpful, they can easily be unhelpful. How do you play that? Were you constantly asking yourself, is this the right pace for me, or was it a nice distraction? How do you
To be honest, I was like, this is going to be a really selfish race for me and that I'm doing what I want to do. And I thought Sean and Jamie, they're probably going to disagree with this, but I thought they could do with me pulling them back a little bit, but I could do with them pacing me forward a little bit. So I had in my head, I want to do 4 miles an hour for the majority of the race, which doesn't sound very fast because it isn't very fast. But would you look at it over a period of like 3 days? Or 200 miles, if you can maintain that, I actually think that's quite a good result. So I was looking at my watch being like, are you doing the 4 miles out? And the first sort of 10, 15, 20 miles, there was a couple of 5 mile an hours in there, but I was like, that's okay, we don't need to worry about that. But if it was going to be 6 or 7, I'd be like, no, we're not doing this anymore because it's too fast. And the boys were actually all right with that. In fact, the boys were like, we're going a bit quick. And eventually it got to like the point where I was like, you can't help them. You can't help. I'm not going to stand at their checkpoints with their crew, and I'm not going to wait for them. I did wait for them. We had chips. Chaps. Where do you have chips? Like 30 miles in, we had chaps. So I waited for them then, but that was the only time. That was when I decided that my pants didn't fit me anymore. They were too big for me. So I cut them off with a penknife in a car park. I cut my underpants off with a penknife in a car park. And then I had, and then
Not sure
ran.
what to say about
And then ran commando for like 20 miles, and then realized that running commando is not for me at all.
You were making some complaints about, yeah, maybe that's
About
personal.
what? Never change anything on race day, guys, including cutting off your pants with a penknife in a car park, because that's what I did. And then someone threw the pants away, and I'm like, I'm sure I could make some money off those. Anyway, that happened, and then I had the chips, and then those two things weren't connected, and then yeah, and then I lost the boys overnight. Got to the first checkpoint, which was Black Boys. I mean, why? Come on. That's the name of the checkpoint. And I was in there for 7 minutes. I was at the checkpoint for 7 minutes. I had a potato and mushroom curry and a naan bread and a cup of tea, and then I left. And I was very, very pleased with myself. And then, yeah, cracked on to South Downs Way. But weirdly, when I got to South Downs Way, I was like, I've done it. I've made it. No, you haven't done it. You're like, you're not even 100 miles into it.
So what, that first night, didn't you plan to sleep on that first night
Yeah, I planned to
somewhere?
sleep at Fell Beacon or in the car, Fell Beacon or Ditchling. Ditchling. Ditchling Beacon is called Ditchling because of the Ditchlings that live there. They're like tiny fairy folk.
I saw several of them. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. But I got there too quick, and then I was like, oh, it's not really late enough because it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I thought I'd sleep at 3 or 4. So I ended up sleeping at House Dean in the back of your car. And this is where another thing occurred, Damien, that you seem to think it's okay to lock women in the back of your car.
Isn't it?
No.
I
So,
mean, according to He Races, that's perfectly well. Let's stop there.
is that what He Races says? Get the front running women and lock them in the boot of your car until all the men have gone past, then let them out again. It's a He
What?
Races standard
Are you trying to
behavior.
tell me that sort of thing isn't allowed anymore? That
No.
is woke, PC, mad world
Nonsense. I
gone.
was just trying to look
Yes.
after you by locking you in the boot of my car. So no harm could come to you. But I was like, I'm going to have an hour long sleep. And it was the lay-by at House Dean Farm, which is quite near quite a busy road. It's quite noisy. And I got in the back of your car and you'd made me a nice little bed. Thanks for that. It was very nice. But then you locked me in there. And when I woke up, I needed a poo. But I was locked in your car.
I do remember you knocking on the window.
Have
Yeah.
you
I
found
was
the
you
bag
interrupted my
yet?
cup of tea. I was having a nice cup of tea. The bag, what? Oh God. No wonder the car.
Yeah.
Oh jeez.
So you were
So this
having a
is
nice, this was like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. You were having a nice cup of tea.
I was chatting to the other runners, chatting to Lorna. It was nice. Yeah, a nice cup of tea. And you interrupted it, rudely knocking on, rudely trying to escape from my car prison. But I did let you out, to my credit, I think. I'm not sure Andrew Tate is going to be impressed with my behaviour, but I did the things I do for you.
I was making quite a lot of noise.
Did you actually sleep in that spell? Because it was meant to be 90 minutes.
It was, what do you think it was?
I think it was an hour. But you
I
said, I
think I
think you
was
said you didn't
asleep
actually
for,
sleep.
I think I was asleep for about 40 minutes because
Okay.
I kept waking up cold, being very cold, and I kept and being very uncomfortable because I just was, because I'd just been running like at a pace for a long time, and you know, and you're just uncomfortable, aren't you? And then I was like, this is fucking ridiculous, I'm just gonna get up and go. So I did, but then I was very fucking cold, and it was 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And then I remember going up onto the outhouse dean, up onto the, I'm just looking at the map because it helps me to remember, up towards the pig farm, or up towards Truleley Hill, which was the next checkpoint. I was like, if I get to Truleley Hill, I can have some breakfast. Turned out more to be like, actually, no, Joe, I got to Truleley Hill, like, I think an hour and a half before I was supposed to. And I felt like shit. Like, when I was eating really well, I was eating well. I just was tired. And it was that first night of the sun had come up, but the sun hadn't come up. It was still dark. And it was very claggy up there. And it was just, there was just no joy. It was just like going through pea soup. But then when I got to the youth hostel at Truleley Hill, I had a jacket potato with beans on it.
You did. I feel like Spuds were almost the savior of your race. You were often asking for jacket potatoes.
I had a jacket potato with beans on, and then I had a, what else did I have? Rice pudding, a bowl of rice pudding, and a cup of tea, and everything, and the game changed. And then I came out Truleley Hill, and then I came running down the hill towards the river. And then Dan Lawson was there with his dog because he decided he couldn't be arsed. So he pulled out 80 miles and he just come up to say hello with his dog. So then I got a little dog cuddle, and everything was great. And off we fucking cracked again. And it was the fucking jacket potato that saved the day. Congratulations to jacket potatoes. Just beans, no cheese.
Also, the tea might have helped.
Maybe. So that was night one done. Then night two was, what happened on night two? I can't even remember.
Oof.
Do you remember what happened?
No, I can remember the third night.
What was it like for you? Was it really boring?
No, it was fun. I would often wait after I'd crewed you, I'd often wait and crew Basil. And give him a pot noodle. He was endlessly cheery and would always want a pot noodle
Was it
and
opposite of me
tea.
then?
And that was quite satisfying. And then I would try and crew other runners here and there where I could. And it was I got a run in as well. It was great. I'm trying to remember that second night though.
So the second night I came across Butser Hill. You went off to charge your car. Oh my God, the second night I found a barn owl in distress and I had to call the RSPB.
Yes. So there's
Yeah.
some controversy around this because, dear listener, you may recall Ali saved a hedgehog during the Spine Summer Challenger South. The hedgehog that she saved no longer breathes.
How do you know?
Well, I mean, it was quite clear from the video. You
He was a big hedgehog, wasn't he?
was
Size of a
he.
football.
So this owl, you're claiming you saved the owl. Do
He
we
was
actually know
flapping
it's still
about all
alive?
over the place, and then he flaps himself into a hedge with some barbed wire. So I rang
But
the
you chased
RSPB
into a hedge,
number.
right?
I was very tired. I ran, and I've got a photo of it. It happened, and then I phoned the RSPB number, the emergency number. They weren't that interested, and then I gave them the what three words, and they said they were going to come and get it. And they said, "Will you be waiting there?" And I went, "No, I won't be waiting there because it's 4 miles to the next aid station. I think I'm going to die."
I
And
mean, that
that
story's a real head turner.
it really is. Should I tell it again? I might write a book about it. Owls about that. So. Then I got to the, then I went up Butser Hill. Butser Hill's a bastard. And then I got to the sustainability centre, which is about 135 miles in, and I had a sleep. That was like.
Yes. So did your crew manage to have a sleep then as well? So that was a key bit of the race, really, wasn't it? That was You're always planning to have a good sleep there. What, 3 hours, I think.
Yeah, so I got in there at 1:30. I got to the sustainability centre at 1:30. It was so joyful. Drew was there. There were so many nice people in there. They made me a rice pudding and a cup of tea. And then, so I got there at 1:30 and I left there about 4 to 5. But I got maybe an hour sleep. Like I went to bed and I kept waking up and being like, am I doing the 90-minute cycle? Am I doing the 90-minute cycle? Am I in the 90-minute cycle? But obviously, I wasn't because I was awake. And I thought I could just go back into it. I'll just go back to sleep and go back into it. Then I became convinced that Hannah Rickman was coming to do an exercise class at the sustainability centre and I was going to miss it. So I was like, I need to make sure I get downstairs for the start of Hannah's class. So I kept waking up for the start of this class. And eventually, I just got up because I was like, this is ridiculous. So I reckon about probably about another hour, maybe, but like not even in a big chunk. I just fucking ended up getting up and being like, I'm just going to go downstairs. And so I went downstairs at like 4 o'clock and had a whole can of rice pudding and the two bits of toast with jam and a cup of tea. And it was great.
That Hannah Rickman thing's not as weird as it sounds, because Hannah was working on the race, and she was at the finish line, so you can sort of
Yeah,
see
but she wasn't
how.
doing exercise classes at the sustainability.
Depends what time you got there.
Oh, okay. Did you just catch the end of one of her Zumba classes?
Yeah,
Yeah.
I'm exhausted
Perfect.
from that. But you were still, yeah. How did you feel your race was going at that point? Because you were still well ahead of schedule. You were often an hour to 2 hours ahead of your plan.
Do you know what? I really can't tell you how I thought my race was going because I didn't really think about how my race was going. I just kept thinking, get to the next bit, get to the next bit, get to the next bit. It was really, the underfoot conditions were really bad. And the weather was good. It wasn't raining, but it was wet. So it was like there was a dry, that second night, there was this clag that was so thick, you couldn't actually use your head torch properly because it was just bouncing into your face. And whatever setting I put it on, it didn't work. So I was holding it down by my ankles. But then I was got a right lean on doing that. You couldn't see shit. So the running was really hard because you could literally could not see a meter in front of you. And obviously trying to navigate and it's just makes everything more, and it's very wet underfoot, very slippery. So it just makes everything more difficult. So I was just concentrating on getting to the next bit, but also not being hungry, not being tired, and trying to maintain this pace of like 4 miles an hour. I was like, if I can do 4 miles an hour while I'm lucid, then I can do 3 miles an hour when I'm not. So you know when you get super tired and you're like, now I've slowed down, but that's okay because I've sort of bought myself some time. And I just really wanted, like you said to me, just do it in the fastest time for you. And that's all I wanted. Like I wasn't at that point being competitive and I didn't really care what anyone else was doing. I wanted to not be sick. I wanted to not start any other sort of terrible gastro problem. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't so tired. Because was I saying to you, I feel really tired? And you kept saying lay down, and I couldn't because it was too wet.
We did briefly discuss that, but I lose track of when you did try and sleep in my, you slept
I
again in
got
my
in
car,
your
but that was the
car
third, that was the
when I
third
was,
night, I
yeah,
think.
no, that was
Oh
second
no, in the
night.
morning. No, the morning of the third day, actually, you got in the car. Yeah.
Yeah, but
Did you
also the
sleep that
second
time?
night when I saw Sarah Page, when Sarah Page came out to see us just on the South Downs Way, I slept in your car then for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But it wasn't even sleep. It's just shut your eyes and you rest for a bit and then you open your eyes, you get up again. I was shutting my eyes, you were throwing blankets on my head, and then I was getting rolling out the locked car again at
10
10
minutes peace
minutes
for all of
later.
us.
Yeah. Yeah. And
Did
then,
you feel like those that nap and naps like that were working?
yeah. Did you think they worked?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did
Yeah, you
work.
would often wake up in a very different frame of mind, actually.
Yeah, like, and even if I hadn't been asleep, it's just having that rest, isn't it? Of like having your eyes shut for a minute or just
Yeah.
resetting something. I don't know what it does. But I was still eating really well. And then it all sort of fell to shit a little bit on the third night, which is to be expected because it always does. And I just could not believe how my watch started to go backwards. It was actually, I like the numbers was going backwards. And there's a shitty bit of woodland, really long bit of woodland between Farnham and Guildford, and Juniper Hall. But it's after St Martha's actually, so it's between Guildford and Juniper Hall, and it's scary, and it's fucking dark, and it is muddy, and it is. I just was terrified, like fucking terrified, because I started to hallucinate. I was really tired. My feet had swollen and were sore, so I was wearing those 8.5, my size 8.5 shoes, but they were still really sore, and. I just, but that's what happens, isn't it? Like it just falls, you just fall, to, your body starts to fall to pieces. And my mind was starting to fall to pieces. But the weird thing about my mind was I kept going, this is all going to be okay. So even though I was like panicking and like proper having a panic in there. And I rang you and told you to come and get me out of the woods because I was scared. You didn't, you asshole. Why didn't you come and get me out of the woods?
Because that's not allowed.
I was scared.
Well, dear listener, it was confusing because I saw a head torch ahead of me and I thought it was Ali. So I thought she was only just, one field away. So I thought I'm going to see her in a second, but it wasn't actually her head torch. It was the head torch of our good friend Jamie, photographer, who was going to photograph you. So when I said, I'll come and
Without
get
my
you,
knowledge.
I thought I was going to see you in a second. I was just going to walk a little way to see you. Then I heard a shriek in the woods. Jamie had. I did send Ali a message in my feeble defense to say there's a photographer in the woods. Jamie, our friend, is in the woods. Hopefully, so you weren't so surprised. It
There was
seemed
all
to be
sorts of things in the woods. There were so
one
many
of the only
things in the
times you
woods.
weren't checking your phone every minute. Because her
That is
face, listener, her face.
unbelievably unfair.
Hold on. And so I did. Yes, he did surprise you. He had set up two big lights that I think to you felt like hand grenades going off. But he actually got an amazing photo. So I think scaring you shitless was worth it for a good photo, right?
Yes. I wasn't actually checking my phone every 2 minutes because I didn't have the capabilities to do it then. And also, I think I did quite well in the race of not doing that. I didn't listen to much music. I did. You made me a race mix, which I listened to 5 minutes. Was like, that's awful, and then put it, then turned it off.
Rude.
And then, well, it turns out it was my race mix that you just loaded onto a fucking iPod.
Just criticize their own music. It's great.
I have, but I was, but yeah, I wasn't. Yeah, I just was like, I just wanted to get on with it at that point. It just that happens. What happens to you at those point? That point in those races, like in the last third, like the last 20, 30 miles.
Over 200.
Do you or 200 and whatever? Like, do you have you ever done a 200?
Well, I've done the spine a few times.
That's
I've
not a 200. Okay, Tour de
Tour de
Géant,
Géant's
maybe.
meant to be 200. I've done three
Except
of
Tour de
them.
Géant is hilly, isn't it?
Yeah,
So it's different.
I've not done a muddy 200. No,
No,
Ali.
but that, no, but like that, that is all, it's always harder. But you, that last 20, 30 miles, like, do you lose your shit or are you
Yeah.
completely focused?
No. You're almost definitely underfueled by that point. You're underslept. Your mind's doing all sorts of weird somersaults, and there could be deja vu, there could be hallucinations. You're obviously in discomfort. I try not to use pain because often it's not, hopefully it's not actual real pain. I just say it's, messages from your body. Your body wants you to stop because it knows it's not crucial. And yeah, it usually is. Well, it doesn't have to be miserable. I must admit, I don't recall being frightened.
You've never been
Like,
frightened.
well, I don't know about never being frightened, but definitely sort of, or definitely spooked out. Yes. Like, well, my first Tour de Géant, I got this really bad deja vu that seemed to last like a good 24 hours. And it was really unpleasant because it sounds kind of funny, but,
24-hour déjà vu. That's
well, it felt like it.
fucked.
I honestly started to believe I can't make new memories. I said, I was telling myself, I can't actually make new memories anymore. I'm stuck in this loop of thinking I've been to this place before when I haven't. And just hating it all and
That's
lots of
what happened to me in the
hallucinations.
woods. I was like, I've been here
Yeah.
before. Why have I come back here? And then I've been thinking about it, and I think I have been there before because I think it's on the North Downs Way 100, but it wouldn't have been at night time. It would have been in the day, and I don't remember it. And it felt like I'd done something terrible in that woods, those woods, and I was going to find what I'd done. It felt like I was looking for the bodies, and I kept seeing people hanging in trees, and I kept seeing people having
Oof.
parties in the pillboxes. And I'm sure there were people in the pillboxes because it was Saturday night, but I don't know. And I kept hearing babies crying, and it was fucking horrible. But when I got out, after Jamie had grenaded me, everything changed.
Why do you think?
Because I saw, well, I saw you at the end. I saw you there. I saw Jamie there. And I just think I thought, this is it now. We're done. Like, it's, I'm done. I'm
I
out of
guess
those
we knew it was the
woods.
last, the very final leg,
I
didn't we?
think I actually thought, I'm out of the woods.
I see what you
That's what,
did.
and I had to, and obviously you've got Box Hill to get up, but actually it's very clear. It's a bit of clean running. It's Denbighs. It's a vineyard. So it's like, you can see, whereas I'd been in a situation where I couldn't see anything for about 4 hours because the woods are so thick. So maybe that was it, but it's interesting to hear that other people, that you as a elite athlete have that slight losing of shit as well.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And I don't know. I'd love to know if that stuff's avoidable or not. I mean, I suppose sleeping more probably, well, does lessen it, but that's going to make you less competitive.
Someone
So
on
it's
Instagram said to
hard.
me they think it's to do with the LED lights of the head torch because they flicker because they're LED. So that makes it worse. But I'm like, well, how can you avoid that? Because you do need to wear a head torch, or else you can't see shit.
Yeah, I don't know. But what is interesting, if you want to talk about it, is you mentioned competitiveness. I was under very clear instructions not to sort of tell you your placing or encourage you to be competitive. But ultimately, you finished third. You had a competitive race. she's pulling a face. It was a really fast time. Do you want to talk about that at all? Because I think that's really interesting in that you often find it almost counterproductive to think of yourself in a race with other people. But
Well, I'm not in
there
a
were
race
still
with other people,
moments.
am I? Because I'm
Yes and
not.
no. It's
I
kind
think
of
in
up
it,
to
I
you.
think I'm not. I don't go into them. When I ages ago on the other podcast, I spoke about this race and I said if I'm ever going to win one of those trophies, it'll be in a 200 because I'm not very quick. So I think I can be right. I can be consistent over a long, long period of time. Right, I know that I'm good at being consistent over a really long stretch. So it won't be that I even in hundreds. I'm not really very fast, but if you look at my splits, I'm consistent. So I'll just chug along. And so I actually think 200s are my jam because they're so long that I can just chug along. And if you can be consistent in your eating and in your resting and in how kind you are to yourself, and that's like fucking so important, is being kind to yourself. Because there were so many times in that race where I was like, you are a useless piece of shit. You're the last person on the course. And it's just like, what are those thoughts? And they're thoughts that are trying to, your brain's trying to stop you. It's just trying to protect you. But you have to be like, I don't have to believe that. It's just my brain trying to protect me and trying to stop me doing what I'm doing. But there were times at the beginning, I was like, my hip flexors are sore. In the first 3 miles, I was like, my hip flexors are sore. No, they're not. What are you talking about? My feet are
You
going to fall
were.
off. I've got a terrible blister. No, you're not. I'm going to be sick. And then you are sick. And then you're like, oh, and then you just keep going.
You
Like,
were definitely like unfair on yourself. You thought you weren't doing well. I remember definitely in the third day when, of course, we're our most tired. You were really unfair on yourself. You constantly thought you weren't doing well, and I was seeing the other runners around you. And I think on that whole day, there was only one other runner who was moving as well as you out of the
I
sort
don't
of.
think it wasn't that I wasn't doing well competitively. It was I wasn't doing how I well for how I wanted to do. And what in my head at that point in day three, I'm pulling a fucking full on Joe Exotic style like mentalism of like this world that doesn't exist where I'm like dropping 8 minute miles and everything feels fine. Of course it doesn't. And then I just like catastrophized that to I felt like I was making you and Lorna wait around for me. That's what I felt like I was doing. I felt like I was being fucking slow on those segments. Was in reality, looking at the splits, I was just doing the same as I was doing before.
Yeah, but I don't quite mean that anyway. I mean, like, literally looking at how people were moving on day three, like, you know, the spectrum from are they even running? You know, so there was a guy ahead of you. He was hiking quite far ahead of you, actually, but like he was hiking the downhill. So he was pretty much done. I don't think he was going to run another step, and he still had a long way to go. And even people, yeah, they just weren't. I suppose the classic idea is the ultra shuffle, isn't it? But there was you and one other guy who would, you know, just moving better than other people around you. So I don't necessarily mean competitiveness. I mean, like, that's almost a process thing, right? Like, you're moving well and you seemed motivated. But yeah, you'd often say negative things about how you're doing when you were doing great. And we didn't mind hanging around. We were just eating all your chips and having endless cups of tea. I mean, it's brilliant, to be honest.
One of
Thanks
the
for all
most
the
interesting
food.
things, one of the most interesting
And the
things was
pizza. Thanks for the pizza.
interesting. Actually, I used some money for that. One of the most interesting things was the food you decided to buy me. So Damien decided to buy me some things, which are quite surprising for a vegan to buy. Someone that isn't vegan, but they know quite well during a race, like a salmon poke bowl. Now, I don't want to eat a salmon poke bowl at mile 148 of a race, do I, Damien? So if I
Well,
don't want to eat,
I
if I
know
don't
that
want to eat
now.
that salmon poke bowl, where's it going to go?
Well, we can't waste that.
No, I'm not going to eat a
Lorna
Wagyu
didn't
beef
want
steak at
it.
mile
Those five Big
159.
Macs, though. Those five Big Macs.
But
I
I
mean,
didn't
I'm pretty
want
sure you
that.
asked for them.
Yeah, I know. So that's what he does, is he'll buy you something that he wants and knows you won't eat, and then he'll be like, can't go to waste. Next thing you know, he's covered in the blood of 1,000 chickens.
Can I crew you at Parkrun this weekend? Because I need some
Yes.
more
You get a Big
Big
Mac.
Macs. Yeah, just in case, just in case.
Anyway, back to this thing. So, what was the question again?
Well, I just wanted to say, in terms of like consistency, your fueling was really good. There was a Do you remember there was a time when I was in a shop, basically, so I could have got you almost anything. And I would message you, and you still had a clear idea. This is day three. You had still had a clear idea of what you would like and what you wouldn't. You didn't want the knickknacks,
Ugh, no
even
flavour
though you like
crisps.
knickknacks normally. Whereas I by that stage, I'm like, ugh, don't want anything. I know I need to eat, but I don't know what I want. And you still had a clear idea of, yeah, I'm really keen on, well, it was nearly always potatoes. But you knew you did want that and you didn't want that. And your fueling was really good. Like you always ate when you came in to the crew points, and your pacing was really consistent as well. Like you say, you were moving, yeah, better than the people around you.
So I think the biggest lesson that I've learned from this is, and do you know what? I am so fucking thrilled with how it went. I'm thrilled. I was like 2.5 hours, I think, ahead of my plan. I took 18 hours off my 200-mile time. I know it's a different race, but still quite a lot of time. And I've looked at my splits, and I'm really pleased because in the last 10 miles, I was still running and I was still doing those 4 miles an hour. Like and when I came in, I was running, and I probably could have done another 20 miles. I would have punched somebody clean in the face, but I probably could have done another 20 miles running if I could have had a sleep. So I'm really thrilled. But the thing that was the most helpful is consistency. Is every time you get to that
Crew,
crew
sorry,
point,
crew.
crewsistency. So every time you get to that crew point is being consistent, like eating anything, just one thing, just having one thing, repacking your bag, doing your water, doing it's basically doing the basics well, isn't it? That's what it is. If you can do the basics well, sleep, drink water, and eat food, you'll be able to keep moving forward. But it's when that stuff starts to go to shit a little bit. And there was a point at just before Butser Hill where I hadn't eaten for a while and I was very tired, and I think I should have had a 10-minute nap at some other point before that. And Lorna gave me a sandwich, and I put it in, and I just threw it all up, all over the floor. I'm so terribly sorry, outside the Discovery Centre. So that would have been a delightful thing for the kids on Saturday morning to find. But like, that was the only time I was sick, and it was like, it's because you fucked this up now. You're really tired, you haven't eaten, and you can't just stuff a load of food in. You have to just have little bits of it. But I was eating like an absolute bastard, and every time I took a bag of food, so it would be like those fake vegan Mars bars, which I can now never eat again,
Oh,
buttermilk
the
bars.
buttermilk things, yeah.
I had like, I'm not joking, I must have eaten 20 of them,
Wow.
and crisps and Twixes and Belaforte chews and all that stuff. I was eating so much. And then every time I got to a checkpoint, I was trying to eat something, like with you, a crew point, I was trying to eat something proper, like a little sausage roll or a banana or whatever thing you'd bought me, or a bit of pizza, even, right? So I think that's it. And if you can consistently do the basics well, you can move forward and it will be okay. And that's what I did. That was my plan.
Yeah.
Comments, thoughts? How was it from your angle? What do you think I could have done better? Do you think that there was something missing in the consistency factor?
No, I was really, like I say, I was really impressed with your fueling and your pacing as well. Because you had said before, like sometimes you do start a bit fast, which is, you know, a very common thing, but it looked like you hadn't. Yeah, the pacing of fueling seemed really consistent. I suppose you did get quite, I suppose you got reasonably negative about how you were doing. But I'm pretty sure I go to those places too, and some of that's just the tiredness. And of course, when you're more tired, you think less positively. But that's all I can think of really. I mean, it went. What about foot? How did you think sort of foot care went? Because that was a when races go beyond 100, you really have. I think you have to pay extra attention to how, especially when it's wet and muddy.
I have really lovely feet. They're beautiful. They look like they're absolute. Why are you doing that? You
No,
don't know
sorry,
my
just
feet. And also, fucking
some
your feet are
pictures.
your feet look like Gollum. So
Rude.
his face. So they're really good feet. And obviously, I slept at 135 miles. I slept, so I took my socks off then. And that was the first time I'd taken my socks off, I think. I didn't take my socks off with you, did I? Did I change my shoes? No, I did. I did change my shoes before that. So I was running in trail talons. And after the Vanguard Way section, when I got onto the South Downs Wales, like I'm going to change my shoes because they are full of grit and they're full of fucking mud. And I'm just going to put on another pair of trail talons and a new pair of socks as a treat so I can really run the South Downs way because it won't be as muddy. Spoiler alert, it was as muddy and it was fucking annoying. But then I didn't take my shoes off again until 135 miles when I was in the sleep station. They were absolutely fine. No hot spots, no nothing. Lubed them up again, put them back in some clean socks, went back out again. And then on that section, I did have to stop on the trail and deal with my feet because I had a couple of little hot spots, but I just taped them. And all I could think in my head was be bothered, be bothered, be bothered, be bothered. Because I couldn't be bothered. It was raining. I had to get my whole kit out on the side of the trail. And I was like, I'll just wait another 10 miles. But I was like, literally another 10 miles, this little hot spot on the back of your heel and this little hot spot on your toe could become a disaster zone. And you've got fucking ages to go. So I was bothered. Consistent foot care. Consistent body care. And that was really good. But then they started to swell. And I remember saying to you, they hurt. And then they were really swollen. And I put them into a pair of 8.5. So I'm a size 7. And they were still hitting the sides. So I actually need to get a pair of 9.5, I think, because they got like a heat rash on the top of them where they were just hitting the top of the shoe. And they were like elephant's feet by the end of it. But there's no tendonitis. It's just fluid. It's just, they were just like, we've had enough now, like they do when they've been out for 65 hours. And they're absolutely fine. They've gone down now and they're beautiful again. And I'm going to see, I've got a bit of a, what I think might be bruising on one of the bones from having them too tight. But I'm going to physio to check that out. But other than that, they're fine. But again, it's being bothered, isn't it? It's being consistent in looking after yourself and not letting things slip and doing the basics well. It pays dividends. If you look at what happened to Sean, fucking Sean's feet, man, he had to go to A&E.
Oh,
Yeah, they were
what
so
happened?
bad
What
because
just what mud infection?
he got a tendonitis in them and then they swelled up so really badly, but he took the Pandora's box approach to not opening it. And because he was like, if I do open it, I'm not going to be able to shut the shoes again because they're just so swollen. And when he got in, they sent him, when he's finished in like, I think about 90 hours, they sent him straight to A&E and he's still waiting on the scans to see if he's got stress fractures because they were huge and just covered in blisters. But
Wow.
you know, it's what it's different. It is what it is. But like, if you know, if he'd have stopped, would it have made a difference? He didn't have a bigger pair of shoes. I think the thing about these 200s is you don't know, so it's better to plan ahead for things like that and have a bigger pair of shoes, like a couple of sizes up, because it will save your race. And I only learned that from the Wild Horse when I tried to put my trail flies on and I fucking couldn't put them on because they were too small, and then my feet actually swelled over the top of the shoe. It was awful. So that's why I've got bigger shoes
Big shoes to fill. Right.
now.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That hasn't
Anyway.
happened to me. That does happen to me at the spine. It doesn't seem to happen to me at the Tour de Géant. I don't know why. But
It's got
yeah, it
something to
does
do with
happen at the spine.
altitude.
Don't know. Don't know.
Maybe it's got to do with the fact you don't drink any water at Tour de Géant, so there isn't any water.
That, yes. There
There
you
isn't
go,
any
folks.
extra fluid to go into your
Stay
ankles.
dehydrated and then you might not get these foot problems.
No foot problems and no
Top
knee
tip.
problems because you're dehydrated. So,
Top tip. Top
top
tip.
tip. Right. Hello. In all the excitement of recording the podcast and the fact that my brain is scrambled, I forgot Gemma's update. So I'm just whacking that in here for you to listen to right now. Here it is.
Hi, just a progress update. I did my strength work, so that was a win. Did my runs, one of which was a 7 mile race this week. Had a great time during the race, didn't look at my time or anything, and was generally quite happy. And then the day after the race, I saw everyone's times had been posted up, and I looked at them and then was very unkind to myself as to where I'd come before in the race and how slow my time was, and all of that kind of baggage and all of that just crept up on me. So that's not great.
So what I really want to talk about in the next episode is this comparison thing of looking at your times and that it making you miserable. I'm going to talk about that with Holly next week, so do stay tuned. But I just wanted to add in Gemma's update because I forgot before. I'm really not very professional and I am very tired. For now, let's go back to me and Damo talking absolute nonsense. There's the questions on consistency. Did you get them? I sent them to you on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Have you got them? Do you want me to read it
Yeah.
out or do you want to read it out?
You're better at reading things out.
Oh, God. Okay. Okay, then. So here I'm going to read the first one out. This one's from Phil. Phil, I think you might want to join He Races. Phil says, I really love how well the ladies have been doing recently. Thanks, Phil. Every big race is always a massive inspiring performance from someone. Do you think, Damien, the ladies are doing well because they are being more consistent? In this, I mean from training to executing their race plan. I've noticed that at the start of a race, you'll never see them bombing off. And only the men really do this. Yet ladies always finish races well. They seem to be a lot more patient at running their own race and not getting caught up in the adrenaline-fueled start. I could continue, but this message is now too long. Lots of love, Phil. What do you think? As a coach, what do you think about the difference in consistency in training and executing a race between your male athletes and your female athletes?
Well, what used to when I used to do UTMB, it was always a debate on why hadn't an American yeah, a lot of the top athletes in our sport are American basically, and at least four women had won UTMB, but no American man had won UTMB, despite them having people like Jim Walmsley and Zach Miller and Hayden Hawks, some of the top guys in the sport, and it was always a debate on why hadn't they. And the debate always used to go around like, oh, it's geographical. They don't get mountains quite the same over here, or it's the travel, or there's this tiny bit of, there's not much real altitude at UTMB. But they've always, and to me, it was totally the wrong debate, because it was like, no, but the American women seem to do fine and they win the race. So to me, what's the real difference to men and women? Part of it is testosterone and ego. So yeah, UTMB is the classic race where men go out really hard and too hard, because they're a lot of them will be used to leading a race or being in the top three, and when you do UTMB they're not even in the top 20, so they're smashing themselves to try and get to the front, and I've been there and seen it, and I think that's the big difference. And there have been several studies on the marathon distance that have shown women pace marathons better, and like, why? I mean, so scientifically, it is true women pace better. They're more consistent. Why is not proven, but my guess would be it's ego and testosterone. And therefore, yeah, men have more of that generally, and aren't as, yeah, and let that make them make mistakes, basically.
Don't you think that as elite athletes, they should be aware of that and try and manage it? Why don't they?
I don't know. I mean, there's also, I mean, so when I got into this stuff, I was quite cautious at first. I've prided myself in the tortoise approach, and one UTMB, I was outside the top 100 at Saint-Gervais, which is the first major checkpoint, and I finished. What are you grinning at? And it wasn't the
Just
year I won it, not the year I won it.
you winning UTMB.
And I finished well in the top 20 that year, but like I gradually moved through the field, and it was really satisfying to race like that. But I was only going to be top 20 if I did that, so I had to learn to be more aggressive early on, actually, but in a controlled way, and constantly asking yourself, is this too much? And the year I had my best race there, 2018, I think for a couple of hours I did push. I wasn't in the front five or even probably 10, but I was close to that. And after a couple of hours, I was like, actually, this is too much for me. I'm going to chill for a little bit. And I did pull back at the right time, and other people dropped out the race, and I recovered and went past people. So that's, for me, that's something I suppose I learned, but I almost had to learn to push a bit more in these big international races. That said, I only ever finished kind of fifth and sixth in all my big races, Madeira, Lavaredo, I guess Mozart 100 I did better, but it was less competitive. But so, well, that might be simply physiologically that I didn't have that extra bit to match these people, but maybe I did need to be more aggressive. But I mean, some of the sport is just having some fun and having a go, and I don't think there's anything really wrong with that, and that excites people, as well. I mean, Zach Miller's the classic case of always going out too hard, and people love him for it, and it often doesn't work, I would say. But we love seeing people give it a go, even if it's not the most sensible approach. So I would say to some, like, it depends what your goals are. And my coach, David Roach, has this phrase that I know Hannah Rickman likes, which is that, like, fuck around and find out. And I think that's okay as well. You've just got to be ready for the consequences, I suppose, of that's going to put your race at risk if you really push early on. But
What do
that's
you
part of the
think?
fun of the
What's
sport.
your approach? Like generally, if there's something that you want, you're gonna tell. I wonder if you'll tell us what is like generally what my approach, right? And I don't go out to win races. I go out to do the best I can do for me. Is to be consistent. Is like the silent assassin approach of I'm just going to do what I'm doing and I'm not going to stop doing it and I'll just keep doing it and I'm not going to get any quicker and there's no secret hidden thing that I'm really good on hills or like I'm going to smash it down all the hills or like I'm really good in rivers. There's none of that. I'll just keep going. I'll just keep going. It's as simple as that. And so if that might work for me, it might not work for me, but I don't really care. That and that is genuinely what my USP is, I think. Is that I will just keep going. So when I'm thinking about spine next year, the winter spine, because I am, the one thing I'm worried about is food, because I'm such a fucking gannet. I'm like, I think I can do it because I'll just keep going. What is your thing? If you're going out to do well in a race, or what is your general, are you like, I'm gonna go fast and lose all these losers at the start and then chill out and then get fast again? What is it? Are you gonna tell us?
Well, no, I mean, fundamentally, the approach we've discussed, I think, is the best, which is I'm just trying to get to the finish in the best possible time for me. That is because we can't control the other runners. So that is the best approach. That said, like when I did the spine this year, I'd done it as my third year in a row. I'd won it the year before. I'd kind of it felt almost like
You
a
won it the year before on a technicality.
I won it the year before. Because someone cheated and took a shortcut. I had an 8 kilometer advantage
You won it
gap on
very
him.
well, and also you did very well last year, and that was overshadowed by the fact that
It's too
Jackson
late.
broke the
You've
record.
that the damage is done.
Okay.
This year I was open to having a bit more fun, and we all, you know, there were 10, arguably 11 of us in a front group early on, all pushing the pace, and only three of us finished. And when I look
Did you
back,
know what you were doing?
we all
Like,
knew it was
what
too
the
fast.
fuck were you doing?
We all knew it was too fast, especially when it's a smaller group of 4 or 5 of us. We discussed it quite openly, saying, like, this is too fast. And yet somehow most of us couldn't hold ourselves back. But I mean, I still finished in my best possible time, the second fastest time in the race. So you could say, to some extent, like I did the best race I could. And Jack, you know, Jack had a day, you know, the race of his life type thing. So I don't, you know, it was
Who else
great,
out of
and
that
I
group
loved it.
finished? It was you, Jack, and someone else. Who else was it?
Conrad.
Oh, yeah.
Conrad
Everybody
Rawley.
else
Yeah.
died.
Yeah. So I don't regret anything from that. It was brilliant fun. And I still, you know, I would have liked to have beaten Jack, but I wasn't going to beat Jack that day. No one was. And I still, objectively, you know, I still had a really strong race, although it didn't feel like that at the time. A lot like you didn't always feel like you were having a good race the other day,
I think it's
when you
just
were.
like if it, when you get to that point, like that, like last 25% of like those long races, where however long it is, everything is just telling you to stop. And so you are like, you're not doing very well. You're not going very fast. You're holding everybody up. And the fact is that you're not, but you're not capable of rational thought. So you're not capable of looking at the facts anymore. You're not capable of doing maths. So that's when the mathematics comes in, and you're not capable of understanding. Like, I knew the race wasn't going to finish till Sunday, and I knew it was fucking Friday night. Like, I was doing fine, but I couldn't rationalize that. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Do you get, if you get to that point, is there a comeback for you, or is it like I just have to deal
I
with
think
that irrationalness?
you're right. Yeah, it was similar for me in that I was ahead of record pace on the spine, but I felt like I was having a bad race, I guess, because I knew Jack was ahead of me. But really, I was probably doing the best I could. Sometimes, I mean, one good tactic I think is bringing in new micro goals, which is like, okay, the next checkpoint is, I don't know, 10 miles away. Can I get there in 2.5 hours? You know, they've got to be based in realism, but giving yourself little goals like that, or actually, I've underfueled over the last hour. Can I make sure this next hour I fuel well? Or it might even be, yeah, I'm pretty wrecked, but let's try and get a nice turnover on this road section. Let's try and run that, you know, without straining, just with nice form. Giving yourself little micro process goals, I think that's quite good. And then sometimes you do have to, you know, it's become really cliched, but think of your why, and you know, why are you doing it? And to me, that usually is I imagine sitting and having breakfast with my kids, and you know, at school, I tell them, you know, when they go for an exam or something, I don't expect them to be the best in the class. I just expect them to try their best, right? So it's the same in my race. If I didn't win, did I try my best? So I imagine my son especially saying to me, "Yeah, but did you try your best, Daddy?" And I have to be able to say, "Yes, I did." So that motivates me to keep sort of ticking over when really, yeah, you just want to sit down in a puddle of your own urine and vomit and cry for a bit and listen to the Smiths. So
That was
that,
most of my Saturday nights throughout the early 2000s.
good times. So yeah, those sort of things, those work for me. Micro goals, your why, and yeah, your goals probably will change in a race. Which is a whole topic itself.
Oh, we're going to do goals as our season. We're going to do a whole season on goals.
Soccer ball goals.
No.
Can I talk my top 10 Thierry Henry goals?
No. Okay. Question two.
He races
Love
will be
it.
onto you.
Loving the podcast so far. Who's this from? This is from Aled
Oh,
Wynn. Loving it. They're loving the
it's
podcast so far because you haven't been on it yet. I was wondering if you had, this is a good one. If I was wondering if you had any thoughts on seasonal consistency. I tend to start the year off well, eager in January and all that, and then usually try to have events in the calendar in spring to keep me motivated. Then the summer is all nice and sunny and light, and in the mornings to get out early. Then I train for the Cardiff Half Marathon, and as soon as that goes, it's autumn and getting cold and dark and wet, and I struggle to maintain consistency through November and December. Any thoughts on how to approach this? I think there's a lot of this about. There's a lot of this about, especially my athletes. What do you do? What are your top tips?
I'm going to
Stump.
be to I'm going to be totally honest. I find this hard because I don't think my motivation dwindles. So I there is a part of me that finds it hard to understand anyone who just doesn't want to run every day. So that is a part, that's a weakness in my coaching where I have to sort of think harder about, well, understand people better. I mean, what I thought about is, you know, is a gym available to Aled? Is that somewhere he could go and, well, either run on a treadmill, consider some cross training, or it might be strength work. So you could still be doing, you know, you could lay a good foundation for next year by, you know, getting really strong in a gym or building or maintaining aerobic base with cross training. But it's got to be something that excites or at least is appealing to you. So, like, for example, yeah, I mean, swimming, for example, I just hate, so I'm not going to do it.
I went
Another
swimming
idea.
yesterday. It was really nice.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Was it a good view with many plasters at the bottom of the pool?
Yeah, it's a very nice pool, actually. It's my gym pool, isn't it? So it's lovely. It's full of bros. They've got a cold plunge pool now there called Brass Monkey. So there's just loads of bros queuing up for that.
Did you secretly use it to sort of wash your feet and try and get the last bits of the South Downs out of your
I had to hide my
toes?
feet because people ran screaming when they saw them. They were like, it was like a cloven-hoofed wonder dog had just walked in.
A few maggots in your trail. But another thing might be, this is what I do with quite a few athletes, is sort of change of focus. Instead of trying to get, you know, sort of moderate volume into a week, change of focus to maybe speed, and then, all right, let's just go out 3 or 4 times in the week, and maybe we do park run or we do 2 workouts a week, and, you know, just instead of thinking you have to get a certain amount of miles in, let's just get 2 fast runs in. And a change of focus can be quite motivating, I think. The other thing is, well, I don't know, this is different for different people, but I mean, I love running in the dark. It's the world is simpler and quieter and more peaceful, and I
Wasn't in the
appreciate
fucking woods.
what, when you murdered that owl.
Murder an owl.
Well, it's quieter in those woods now, isn't it?
Those babies crying in the woods.
But I can't, you know, force other people to enjoy running in the dark. And but I do love, I mean, I love a bit of weather as well. I like a bit of wind or rain, not too much rain, but I don't know. I can't force people to have that same attitude, but to me it's quite exciting. I like putting on my cagoule and thinking, you know, it's sort of me against the weather, and the weather will win, but can I survive it for a bit? And I like a
But
good
I
head
think that's a
torch.
really valid thing, is seeing it as a big adventure. Like, it's not a suffering. Going out in the winter is not a suffering. It's the opportunity to have an adventure that you've not had before. So I think there's a lot of, for Alad, there's a lot of mindset work to be done. God, I sound like a prick. It is psycho babble. But there is a lot of mindset work that you can do to, first off, You don't need to be consistent through the winter. You can have a rest if you can have some downtime. Like you're allowed downtime is part of like rest is part of training. So if you want downtime and you want to factor that in for the winter, factor it in for the fucking winter. But if you've got a race like the Arc or the Spine or like winter fell running or winter cross country, then obviously you can't do that. So you're going to have to crack on. But there's two things here. One of them is who's the person that you want to be? What's the result that you want to get? What's the net result you want to get? And how? And so if you look at the result you want to get, if that is doing a winter race, then you're going to have to behave like someone that does a winter race, which means being consistent through the winter, or see it as a big adventure, like you just said. Like you see it as an adventure. That's
Or
your
even micro
mindset.
adventures, like each time I go out, it's a little adventure, I suppose. But yeah, the really obvious thing is to sign up for a race. And in fact, I mean, even Jasmine Paris, who I coach on and off, she when she won the spine race, she signed up for that to keep herself running through the winter. So she signed it up to motivate herself to keep running, you know. And I love that approach as well, that it was more, you know, racing to train rather than training to race. So yeah, hopefully there's something enough there for our good friend Aled.
Like
I did
fell
have a
runners and trail runners are made in the winter. There's so many skills you learn in the winter that you don't learn in the summer because there's so much more like jeopardy. Like, you know, it's like nav with clag and, you know, it can still be claggy in the summer, but you're going to get way more practice at navving in low visibility in the winter. Kit, things that happen you're more likely to fall over. And if you're going to fall over, how are you going to manage that? Like, honestly, I think that experienced runners are made in the winter and we should change the mindset to this is a great opportunity for me to do some amazing training rather than, oh my God, it's cold and wet, because it is cold and wet, but that's just a circumstance, isn't it? It's how you use the circumstance.
Well, and on back to motivation as well, that does motivate me because I sometimes think on a day like this, maybe my rivals wouldn't go out and train. And if I go out and they didn't, then that's another brick in the wall.
Yeah, did you hear about the bricks? About Roach's bricks? Has Roach ever told you about the bricks?
Is stacking bricks.
Yeah. So now me and Kirsty want everyone to buy Lego so they can actually stack bricks in their house.
I think we all should. We should stack a lot of bricks.
It's a big hit. Some people got different colour bricks for their running and for their S&C. I've got messages.
Oh
I'm
wow! That, no,
excited.
that's a great idea. That's a great idea.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, stacking the bricks. Yeah, but I've got a few other thoughts on consistency. If we got time, if you're not going to cut
Unfortunately, we
me
haven't got
off.
time. Thanks, everybody. See you later. Bye-bye. We've got time. Go on. Give me your consistency thoughts.
Was just when you know we've had a couple of messages saying you do seem to be less mean to me lately. But hopefully that's people can see that hasn't really happened.
Because I've had threats from He Races, postal threats
Yeah.
and in-person ones.
People in woods sent into the woods. Yeah, I've had some thoughts on consistency if I'm allowed, or just is it only the female coaches and friends that are allowed to talk about consistency?
Get a bit tasty over there.
Man free zone.
Are you wearing your World Heart Runners jumper?
Yeah, but I've changed all the names.
Perfect.
Yeah,
He's crossed them all out,
John,
written
Steve,
Jim.
Barry, Bob, Gary, yeah. Not Jack. Yeah, I think it comes down to three things consistency for me. Courage,
Oh, I like this. Let me get my pen. Courage, yeah.
prehab,
Prehab.
Prehab Sprout, a great band, and holistic. So we talk about listening to your body, but to me it's listen to your body when it whispers so it doesn't need to shout. So that really is having the courage. So consistency, you might wake up and you've got a concern, whether that's a niggle or tiredness or a cold perhaps, and you're concerned whether you should run. Now you might think I've got to be consistent, so I should get out and run. I actually think the opposite, have the courage not to run because you're more likely to be consistent because you're more likely to be healthy and run the next day. So I was catching up with an athlete of mine yesterday. Big shout out to Ellie. And she's done this twice in the last 6 weeks. She's taken 3 days off. One was for a cold and one was for a small niggle. But she instantly went, right, I'm not running for 3 days. And that meant she got back at it 3 days later. In both instances, she was back running 3 days later. I'm sure we've all done the thing where we've carried on running and then we've had to take a week or maybe much, much longer off. So it's having the courage to step back. But then it's also thinking what else will help your consistency. So the really obvious things are sleep and fueling. We're aiming hopefully for an average of 8 hours sleep a night. Fueling is simply eating enough and hopefully eating the right things, especially perhaps protein, getting that
Salmon poke bowls. Big Macs.
This is scandalous gossip. There's no proof in any of this.
When I woke up in his car, I had a Big Mac wrapper stuck to my face. It wasn't mine.
There's no evidence of that.
So sleeping well, eating.
And then things like strength work. It might be regular physio visits or foam rolling or muscle guns or just doing that extra prehab, really. And also, obviously I'm a coach, so I would say following a structured plan is more likely to bring consistency because you're less likely to go, oh, I might do 30 miles tomorrow. Oh, I'm broken. Whereas a coach would probably say, actually, your most recent run is only 14 miles, so let's not jump to 30 because that's, asking for some trouble. And having maybe a rest day and stuff like that. And the third thing is the holistic approach, which does overlap with what I just said, but is thinking about your body apparently doesn't know the miles. It just knows the stress. It doesn't know where they've come from. So, all right, that doesn't, when you think of your legs and muscular sort of things, that doesn't work there, but that's because we're not thinking about the whole sort of endocrine system and hormones, which are all important. So if we've just had a really stressful day at work, like we've had to, crew someone for 200 miles, for example, it can't be more stressful than that.
He wasn't paid, by the way. It wasn't work. He has paid in many ways himself.
Huge invoice in the post. Thinking holistically that, stress from work or life, or lack of sleep, for example, those sorts of things does feed into your running. So, people, I've definitely seen it where people have got injured. We're not really sure why, because it was a low volume week. There wasn't anything obvious in the training, but actually, they just had, a relationship crisis, or they moved house, or one of the children was ill and they didn't, they really didn't sleep well that week, or they just were very stressed. So a way of monitoring that, I mean, it's not foolproof, but say, looking out for your HRV or resting heart rate are reasonable, it's a gauge of that sort of thing. So I would say those three things: courage, prehab, and a holistic view of your life. Hope that helps, and hope that doesn't get cut out because it's a man's point of view.
No. Oh God, unbelievable. That's actually very helpful. And I think one of the things that's interesting is that courage not to run, but having the courage to pull back and be like, when we talk about consistency, and I think we've already got to this point over the last three episodes, is that we're not talking about doing the same thing every fucking day. We're not talking about running every day. We're not talking about doing exercise every day. We're not talking about, we're talking about your whole coaching thing is the long game, right? You're talking about the long game, and the long game isn't just, it's not just from now until the race. It's from now until the end of the game, which is death, right? So if you're going to play the long game.
Am I kidding people?
Yes. So okay. If you're with your jokes, you are. So if you're going to play the long game, it needs to be little effort, little consistent effort, rather than the heroic effort of, I'm just going to go out with this cold because if I don't, I'm not going to be able to run that marathon in 3 weeks. Like that isn't helpful, is it? So I often say to athletes, like, with these decisions that you need to make long-term, is this going to help you or is it going to hinder you? Is this a short-term hit that's going to affect a long-term gain? Because if it is, don't fucking do it. And I think with stuff like being ill or having a little niggle or being like, I'm exhausted because work's fucking killing me and I just can't get out this week, is that little hit of endorphin from doing the race really going to matter in the long game? No, it fucking isn't. The long game is looking after yourself. And when I think about that 200, if I think about my performance in that 200, that performance is a lifetime's worth of training. That wasn't the block. That was every bit of running I've ever done and everything that I've ever learned and every little tiny thing that's ever gone wrong. There is no doubt in my head that Holly and Pete's training has completely changed me as a runner. But all the problem solving and all of the making sure I ate and making sure I drank and making sure that even when I was telling myself I was a useless piece of shit, I could pull myself back from it. That's a lifetime's work of, like, learning stuff. And then in the last 3 years, putting that into practice with the mindset stuff. So it's not immediate and it's not short term and it's not a block related thing. And I think that's where consistency matters. Like, you don't see it as like, this is going to end, because it's not, because consistency doesn't end, does it? It goes on forever, which I think blows people's fucking minds and frightens them. But yeah, that's really helpful. Thanks for that.
Well, and there was a study, I can't remember which which year it came out, but in the last few years, and it was on older male athletes, but it was trying to work out what gave them the best marathon times. And it wasn't some epic workouts or long runs. It was the consistency they'd had before the race that that gave them the better results. So there you go.
There you go. Thanks,
And it has the word
Damien.
tea in it, so what's not to love?
Consistent tea. See,
Yeah.
consistent
No,
tea.
coffee's nowhere to be seen. Yeah.
I think I've gone off coffee on the race. I think I went off it. I think you made it so badly that I'm like, that's not for me anymore.
All part of the plan. All part of the plan. Great.
I tell you what is awful, Oulton and Farnham.
Oh gosh, I did feel for people in Farnham. Yeah, it was like rush hour. For you, it was like rush hour, dark, really busy, and
There's
you had to
quite a few
cross.
drunk people coming out of bars and things and also doing their Christmas shopping. And I was like, you come off the
Sorry
hill,
about
you're
that.
like, you come off the hill and you're like, whoa, like, why are there people here? And then you go back into the woods. It was fucking horrible. Thanks for this. Next week, we've got the return of Holly Sables. Woohoo, on Christmas Eve. What a treat. Well, we're recording on Christmas Eve. It'll come out at Christmas. When will this one come out? Probably nearly
Probably
Christmas.
never.
What a lovely treat for everybody, eh? Jingle all the way. What's your next race?
Oh, I'm doing a spine test run
Are
of
you allowed to say that?
I don't know.
Is this an exclusive?
Kind of.
Oh.
So I'm doing that they're going to launch a new race called the Sprint North, which is basically the last sort of 40 miles of the race from Bellingham to the finish, and it is actually the best section of the whole route. So
No, it's not.
the Cheviots are the bit before is debatable. The Cheviots are, though, aren't they?
They're all right if it's not horrendous. Mind you, I suppose
Where's better?
if you're fresh and it's full of snow,
Well,
it'd
that's
be really good
exactly it.
fun.
So most people experience the Cheviots right at the end when they're absolutely smashed and sleep deprived and they're falling down the hill and they're confused. And it whereas in this new race, that's why I genuinely think it's such a great idea, because you get to do the best bit when you're fairly fresh.
Oh God, it's such a hero. Yeah, I've done the spine, finished it. Here's a picture of me kissing the wall at the fucking Border Hotel. But you didn't, did you? You did 45 miles of it.
Doing the spine. I'm doing the spine. I'm gonna
Yeah.
snog the wall. Bog
Brutal.
bothering.
Brutal.
Hashtag
Do you have to carry
brutal.
full kit?
Yeah, I fucking do. So I'm
Okay.
already
Ooh, he just said
I'm
Damien swore.
That's because all the stupid items they've added this year to the first aid kit, all the needles and K tape,
There's
and I've had
always been needles in this first aid kit.
no.
There's always been needles in the
Well, if
first
it
aid kit.
was, they were smaller and there were less of them.
Oh, right.
I've got a real needle about that.
Now you've got to take 15 years worth of K2 tape, haven't you?
I think it is 15 meters. If you're doing the full spine race, 15 meters. No. It's I'm sure there are good medical reasons. I'm sure there are good medical reasons. But I thought I had all the
You're
kit.
tired. You could tape yourself to someone else, then they could drag you along.
I should have done that with Jack this year. Yeah. Yes. So I'm getting my. I thought I had all the kit. Turns out I don't, because they've added loads to the first aid kit this year, including what was it? Fleecy,
Fleecy web.
fleecy.
Fleecy
Yeah,
web.
fleecy web, whatever that is. So I've just ordered a load of stuff online last night. Other than that, yeah, ready to rumble.
Great. And we're going to be media teaming, aren't we?
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah, he says. So that'll be fun. All right, great. Well, I will see you when I see you. thanks for coming. Thanks for looking after me at the weekend. Oh, and everybody listening, if you would like to share this amazing podcast, which has been incredible for many reasons, with your friends, please do. And leave us a review on iTunes and on Spotify and follow us on runningwontsaveyoupod@gmail.com is the address. And also runningwontsaveyoupod is the Instagram account. Oh, and don't forget to enter the competition to win a pair of trail talons. They're the shoe that I wore in this race. Anything else to add?
I'm never doing this again. Thanks.
She races, he races, into Ultra and the Green Runners. All right, we love you. Bye.
Bye.